The following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and my associate Dan DuBose has already joined us on the line. Dan, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Good morning, Nathan.
Very good. Good morning to you, sir. It's here still early in the new year, and I think today there's several topics we can talk about that are germane timing-wise. I was just reviewing an article about the ability. This is a CNBC article, and I know this is old hat to us, Dan, but we forget that most of our listeners are not tax CPAs or other tax professionals, and so I wanted to take some time here in just a couple minutes to talk about that fourth quarterly estimated tax payment deadline that's approaching us here in another 10 days or 7 days, I guess, a week or so. It's actually a little longer because of the 17th falling on a weekend, I guess, or holiday, as the case may be. In any event, before we do that, let's finish our disclaimer regarding those that might be listening to the show today that think they hear something that might apply to their specific facts and circumstances. And as we try to remember to say every week, please don't rush out and implement these strategies, whether it's tax or wealth creation, cash flow, etc., without having your current advisors, whoever they may be, legal, tax, accounting, real estate specifically, and in the case of most of the things we'll talk about. Hopefully your current advisors understand these strategies and can give you some guidance as to whether what you thought you heard does in fact apply to you. It's still current information, et cetera, et cetera. And for those of you that don't have advisors and want to consider working with Dan and I, you can go to the BA Planner website. That's BEAPLANNER.com. And you'll see in the top right, there's a forms link, which if you'll click that, you'll see there's four forms there that if you can give us the information by simply completing the form and submitting it, it'll come back to Dan and I. We'll take a look at it and see how we might sync up with your goals and objectives and your current, and it's very important, your current facts and circumstances to see, you know, if we can help you move forward. And what a great time of year and a great time generally, right, Dan, to start investing in high-quality real estate assets.
Never better time than the present.
Well, it's it's interesting you say it like that. I think most people are saying, well, you know, that's not what I hear. You know, I hear the economy, you know, this past week we had former Fed chairman Alan Greenspan talking about the looming recession. He's, you know, no longer part of the Democratic regime, so I guess he can speak his mind. And then, you know, I think several of the big banks, economists have said that, you know, there's clearly recessionary headwinds. But what have we learned having watched real estate, specifically the multifamily market and some other markets? But I think the bulk of our clients are invested in real estate private partnership syndications and involving multifamily apartments. But what have we learned by watching that asset space for low these many years, Dan? At least 20 years in both of our cases. Actually, you've been involved in that segment even longer. But what do we know about the ups and downs in the market?
It's mostly ups. You know, it's going to increase. Real estate, they don't make any more land, so real estate is still the best earning long-term asset class there is.
Well, I don't know of any better space to put your money, assuming you're not in the know, quote-unquote, regarding the public stock market. I mean, if you're an executive at one of the publicly traded firms and you have some input on options and other tools at your disposal, I can't tell you that you won't do as well or better in the stock market. I'll just tell you, the average person, the average investor that maybe has $50,000 to $100,000 to invest will not do as well in the market as they will typically. And again, no guarantees, but you know, we know where the low-hanging fruit is in the real estate market. And for the average person, passive investing, which is what most of our clients do, we have some active operators, managers, etc. But most of our clients have reached a point in life, whether they're 45 or 65, where they don't want to get out of bed in the morning to go run that old Class C apartment building. Right, Dan?
Right.
And so, thankfully, there's enough profit, I guess you could say greed at some level, in the mix to where, you know, younger, more active people perhaps do like getting out of bed in the morning to go rehab those buildings, get the rents up, which in turn gets the net operating income up, which in turn gives us ability to pull money out of our investment, whether it's a refinance or whether it's a sale or whether it's simply this month's rents exceed this month's expenses. There's three basic cash flow streams that we see with respect to these investments. And again, the what we call operational cash flow, which is this month or this quarter rents exceeding expenses, that creates cash flow. And then, as I mentioned, once we buy an asset that's performing under market in terms of its net operating income or NOI, as we improve that property, we're able to raise the rents. And then at some point, we will consider refinancing or selling. Typically, a refinance might occur on a 1.5 to maybe 3 year timeline. And by the way, Dan, what's happened in that scenario where we've identified a property that's under market, we've put together a transaction, and I say we, it's not we, Dan and Nathan, it's the syndicator or the sponsor, the lead partner. Those terms all refer to the same party. But what are they looking at, Dan, and then what are they doing execution-wise typically that gets us the ability to refinance and enjoy the cash flows at a higher level?
Well, they're looking, of course, first to get the rents higher. They're going to, well, I guess first, really, you got to improve the property.
Right.
You got to spend the money to get the new paint, new grass, new plants.
New bark parks and media rooms.
Make somebody want to come by and stop at your place.
Right,
to rent.
Right. They're going to make it. They're going to bring it into the, I guess, what I would say 2000s, but that shows our age, huh? So they're updating. They're bringing the property up to, you know, maybe some stainless appliance level. They're putting the as I mentioned, the bark park, you know, the dog parks in, the media rooms, or maybe
some covered garage.
There you go, some covered parking or some garages. They also may be offering smart home packages, valet trash pickup. These are, you know, you may think as someone that's looking for a place to live, oh, isn't that amazing? Isn't that awesome that a landlord would provide that? Trust me, all those little amenities, those little add-ons are done in the context of raising the net operating income. And if you're new to investing in real estate, please understand the relationship between bringing the rents up to market. In other words, what are the properties in your general area renting for and why? You know, what's the amenity packages that they offer? And then, you know, it's not necessarily monkey see, monkey do. It's monkey see and maybe monkey do better, right? And then maybe you can go over the market, although typically there's normal limits to what someone's willing to pay for a certain amenity class. But that's kind of the first step, Dan. After you put a deal together, you acquire the property, and, of course, you're looking at properties that are under market. We've got an industrial project that we hope to have time for today that would be an example of this, where, you know, this is a little different niche of real estate than what we're talking about with multifamily, but the process is similar. You know, the project that we hope to discuss was acquired at below, or it's being acquired at below market pricing. And you might say, well, gee, I thought prices of real estate have gone up. Well, Dan, how would you respond to that?
Sometimes there's a seller that needs to sell.
That's exactly right. And sometimes there's a seller, whether they are being forced to sell because maybe they've got a certain debt or loan obligation, maybe it's timing in terms of, you know, the length of time they've held the asset. Maybe they need to rebalance the portfolio. If it were a mom and pop, maybe it's, you know, they see the, you know, when's the last time we woke up and felt 45 again, right, Dan? It's like, you know, we see the writing on the wall. We understand, hey, we're getting closer and closer to the need to transition wealth, whether it's to a third party or whether it's to our family. And obviously it's a two-way participation there. But bottom line is there are opportunities up and down the market, have been since the beginning of time. And it's similar, I guess, to the stock market in that sense. You never know whose facts and circumstances unrelated to what the company is about may be dictating a sell. And so to the extent you can take advantage of that by acquiring assets below market and improving those assets to capture the difference, which in the case of this industrial project, essentially the potential to outperform what we would call the baseline underwriting. In other words, a sponsor has conservatively underwritten an exit, and given the purchase prices, they think that they can come in a very attractive spot once they make the property ready to be entitled to, you know, other owners, participants, lessees, as the case may be, et cetera. But before we talk about that, let's talk just generally, Dan. I know, you know, it seems like every week we get started going down the path of you know, real estate syndications and, you know, talking about, you know, how they represent a pristine asset class and a very desirable asset class. And I guess just generally at base, you know, most Americans have some retirement wealth, at least those that we're dealing with that work for a company. You know, you went to college, you did what you were supposed to do in terms of getting a degree, or is that more like getting a job, Dan? Is that what the degree gets us typically?
Maybe.
But I'm curious, Dan, I know you went to an esteemed university in Southeast Texas. What university was that, Dan?
Lamar University.
There you go. Big time university. And I went to U of H. So I don't, you know, I'm going to say it's esteemed. I got what I wanted out of my college.
My degree, thank you, Lord.
Say again.
I got my degree.
There you go. But did we ever take a class in how to make money, Dan? I don't remember one at U of H. I know I took accounting. You probably took accounting, I'm assuming.
I took a bunch of accounting.
Right.
Yes, I did.
We learned the generally accepted accounting principles, but there weren't any principles about how do you make a profit, right? And so, you know, as we have retirement wealth start to create within the traditional, you know, let's call it a 401 or IRA plan, depending on your facts and circumstances, you know, too often it's simply, you know, we're putting money into something we really don't understand, or maybe we've got a money manager that might purportedly understand, but, you know, I don't see many money managers that are investing in real estate private partnerships, right? It's like a whole segment of the investment market that's overlooked. Why? Well, it's probably because they don't get paid to market apartment buildings. Right, Dan? What do they get paid to market to your 401 funds?
Fees. They get fees, big fees for selling stocks and bonds and mutual funds.
Yeah, and index funds and assorted other things that... Are those like a slow trajectory as they increase in wealth, Dan? Or are they up and down? What's the market look like right now in this space?
Well, the market is up and down. And it amazes me every day when I look at it, how much it does move. But, you know, year to date, and we're only 1 week in it, but year to date, 2023, we're up 1.5% on the S&P 500, which is, you know, that's making people feel pretty good, but who knows what's going to happen Monday morning. You know, between now and then, all kinds of stuff could happen that could change that market feeling.
Well, that's just right. That's exactly right. And I guess when you compare the yo-yo effect of the market with real estate private partnerships, do we have ups and downs in real estate, Dan?
Yes.
Having been here in the mid-80s, do we have ups and downs? We do. However, excuse me, do you think the frequency of the ups and downs is comparable with the stock market, or do you think there's a much slower rise and fall when it comes to, for instance, apartment buildings?
You know, multifamily has been very strong for its whole history. It's you know, it took a dive back in those 86, I believe it was, when they changed the rules of the game suddenly and made it a lot tougher for those developer operators, managers to really make money on a short-term basis. Long-term, they still held out and did really well.
Yeah.
You know, those that stayed in it, the ones that were able to stay in it have done really, really very well.
Well, and, you know, I think it starts with the basics. I mean, most people need a place to live, right? The way our culture and our society operates. And, of course, it's all over the board as to the nature of that real estate specifically and what kind of amenities you're looking for, willing to pay for, et cetera. But I guess what I would say, and I'm trying to bring this back around, is, well, how does somebody get started? You know, I had... it's a common occurrence. I had lunch this week with a prospect that was a very common scenario. They own their own company. They have a building that they occupy. So they have real estate. However, it's not cash flow generating real estate that they don't have to get out of bed in the morning to take care of, right? I mean, they've got to keep that building maintained. They've got their business in it. And that's a different type of real estate. And yet, even in that scenario, over the years, they've owned that business for a number of years, the real estate value has kind of gone up as they're sleeping, literally, right? Because you've got, as you said earlier, Dan, they're not making any new real estate per se. I mean, there is development, obviously, and redevelopment. But bottom line is, it's a commodity that's not unlimited. I don't think there's, well, I don't know. I guess maybe if you're Elon Musk, you might think you're going to discover some other real estate out there someday. But bottom line is it's a finite, I don't want to say it's a commodity, but in a sense it is. But so in discussing with this couple, the difference between cash flow generating passive apartment investing, it's like it suddenly occurred to them that there may be a better way to take advantage of their knowledge base and their wealth to date, although the wealth is tied up in the business and the company's real estate, but unlocking that wealth, it's like I explained to them. I said, you guys are retired, quote unquote, or you have the ability to retire. You just don't have the assets deployed right. Well, Dan, how many people could we say that about that come to us? That's most of who we work with, right?
Yes. Oh, yes.
It's like they have some money. Like many Americans, it's locked up in their 401 or their IRA, or it's locked up in a company asset that could be refinanced or sold, otherwise transacted, to generate. Might go take a loan against it. You know, if you got a building or a building that's got a couple million dollars in equity, you might be able to refinance that building, take the money, invest it in cash flow generating assets, and get started, you know, with the apartment space, which, again, of all the asset classes we look at, seems to be the low-hanging fruit. Now, that said, the industrial project that we're going to just speak about for a few minutes here has a three-year trigger. You know, it's designed or it's projected, pro forma, if you will, to pay out in 3 years. Well, that's not a long time to be able to recapture or recoup a big chunk of your money in terms of your original investment. And so are you going to do that on the building, Dan, that you've got in your trader business? Maybe you've got a business that's a retail front, or maybe it's a factory. You know, when you buy or build, are you looking at a three-year trigger typically to pull money out of that building? Probably not.
No, many, many years.
Yeah, it's probably not. So that's why, I guess, when you ask the question, why do we, when you're looking at achieving your financial freedom, and I'll just mention things that I hear others on the radio saying. In fact, there's a group here in Houston that I'm sure some of our listeners are members of. I used to be a member of that group, and you know, they are kind of right on some of the stuff they say about retirement. Unfortunately, it's a mixed message, and unfortunately, the focus at times tends to be more wealth creation for them than those that they're bringing in as members. But I hear routinely, we're not going to, or you're not going to be able to retire with your 401k plan. And that may or may not be true. I mean, Dan, I know I've got some clients that have been working as, you know, like an oil and gas geologist or assorted different types of engineering. They showed up every day. They put in their time. They put in their 401 contributions. A couple of them may have done really well with things like, if you think back to the Fidelity Magellan days, where money just seemed to grow on the Fidelity tree, I guess. And, you know, they turned around at 60 years old or 65 and had several million dollars in their 401. Well, I got news for you. If you're the one selling the memberships over at that old school real estate mentor platform, you can retire with your 401k when you've done that. Now, is that everybody? No, it's not. I understand. But is it everybody that joins that self-made millionaire real estate mentor program? No. I've got clients from 20 plus years that are members of that group. Some have done very, very well, and some not so well. And I can show you the numbers to prove it. And so what's the difference between some that joined and seemingly have hit it out of the park and others that just kind of meander along and are achieving maybe better rates than the market, the stock market? I get that. I would tell you that if you drew a circle around the average return on these real estate private placement investments, that somewhere between 10 to 30% a year would be the range. I mean, really, on the low end, I don't see deals where you lose your money. I mean, there's been a couple due to circumstances in most cases. I wouldn't say it's because of a systematic flaw with the model. It's certainly not that, but there's been issues that have arisen with management or with external forces, let's say. And but I could say the same thing about the folks that have achieved 30%, or in the case of one gentleman that I'm familiar with, and there's others, they achieved 70% return for 2 years before they sold. Again, circumstances. Do we go into these transactions pro-forming or showing pro forma data of 70% type annual returns? No, I don't know. Have you ever seen a pro forma, Dan, that showed that type of return?
I have not, and if I did, I think I'd tear it up pretty quick.
Well, it depends on where it was located and what kind of what the rents look like relative to the market, et cetera. In any event, we're going to go ahead and take a short break. We'll be back here in a few minutes, and we're going to talk more about how we can retire by controlling some real estate cash flow as opposed to just hoping that our 401 gets in the right index funds, mutual funds, etc. We'll be right back with more of the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and my friend Dan DuBose.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
The Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, focuses exclusively on helping investors understand the current options for investing. The syndication arena has changed. You can now take advantage of direct online investing options without expensive upfront membership fees. Nathan Ross, CPA, discusses these options and more, including the math involved with partnership selection, reporting, and performance. On the Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, Sundays at 7 a.m. right here on KSEV. Okay, welcome back to the second half of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And I'm here today talking with Dan DuBose, CPA, about some of the topics that are germane to the type of clients that we work with, typically folks that are trying to build their retirement wealth. They may be 45, they could be 35, but they're typically 45 on up. And they realize they're behind, and they're looking for ways to increase their retirement wealth, and not necessarily fast, but in a fashion that they're not worried about getting to age 55 and feeling like they're behind the same eight ball. Dan, what do you define retirement as these days? How much does it take to where you can feel rather assured that you're not going to outlive your money? I guess that's what it's all about, right? Do we want our money to outlive us, or do we want to outlive our money, Dan? How would you answer that?
Well, I read a book one time. It's called I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of the book, but the guy says, when you're dead, have zero in the bank. Live rich, die poor, is what it is. Something like that was the name of the book. And it's if you can die with zero in the bank account, you've got a perfect estate plan. You know, you spent your money and you've done what you wanted to do, and you come out, go to your final home with zero in your bank. perfect account.
Well, and has that gotten easier to achieve, Dan, or harder with all the what's the life expectancy look like these days compared
to 85 for men, I believe, 85, yeah. 86, yeah. Women is a little longer.
Yeah,
87, 88.
Is that on an upward well, actually right now
it is.
It is overall, but I am gonna say that these last couple years have been difficult for obvious reasons with COVID and some of the other I'm not sure if the fentanyl deaths are factored in there, but you know, it's having just been through the Texas driver's license program again, which, you know, by the way, for those of you that want to find the fountain of youth, just let your license expire for 2 years and a day, which I did because I was overseas and had no way to renew it without getting a vaccine so I could travel or quarantine, and I just wasn't willing to do it. So I let it expire, and in the Texas DPS eyes, I was 16 again. Had to start back, go through the training. Thankfully, it's an online world these days, and then had to go take the skills test, and yes, I passed it the first time. I was fortunate, and I'll just tell you that, 46 years of driving mattered not to the government agency that administers our driving rules. And I'm going to suggest to you that everybody should sit through that roughly 10 hours worth of video training, and it might change the way you pay attention when you get behind the wheel, because I got to tell you, I am, you know, guilty as charged when it comes to being distracted in an automobile. And I tell you what, some sad stories out there. And of course, you being distracted doesn't necessarily mean you can avoid the other drivers that are distracted. And it really amazes me, Dan, that we legally can get behind the wheel of a 6,000-pound machine. And you know, I see people worried about gun control and you know, everything to do with firearms. It's like, man, vehicles are every bit as dangerous, if not more so. And you talk about taking innocent lives. It's just tragic, you know, some of the stories. But anyway, what the thing that impressed upon me, and I guess the reason I started down this path, is how many people pass away or are, you know, injured or otherwise maimed every year from drivers. And it's not just the bad ones. It's not the drunk drivers. It's not the ones texting. I don't text as much as I look down at Google Maps to see what the speed limit should be if I don't just happen to see a sign, right? And, of course, these videos that I was watching were all out of date enough to where Google Maps wasn't a thing. But I could probably suggest that's one of the biggest distractions we might have. And boy, do I rely on that. But anyway, the bottom line is it's harder now to make your money last because our life expectancies are higher. And just to recount another personal experience here, 2 or 3 weeks ago, I made a trip over to Austin to establish a new medical relationship. And, the doctor fashioned himself more to be a chemist than a doctor. And he works at the mitochondria level of the cells, not your blood work. He really couldn't care less about your blood work other than, okay, well, I knew something was wrong and we're going to go find out what it is by doing a genetics test and figuring out what your immune system is telling us. And so all the technology that you heard and read about 5 to 10 years ago, the genome technology, that's all come to the front of the commercial viability position, I suppose you might say. And now, I don't know, Dan, 85 may be low for people that decide they want to age differently. You know, you want to get rid of the inflammation and the things that cause dementia and, type 2 diabetes and high blood pressure. And, you know, you go down the list and it's like there's solutions now. And again, you get guys like the gentleman that I am connected with now from a medical relationship, and I have all the hope in the world that I'm going to live a long, productive life, unless I get hit by a distracted driver, right? I mean, all of our best planning can end in, I guess.
Or be that distracted driver.
Well, you know, let's try to think positively. I've changed in the last 2 weeks, right? So anyway, so back to, okay, we're probably not going to be able to retire with our 401. I didn't hear a number, Dan, but I'm going to give you a number. I'm going to tell you $3 to $4 million of cash flow generating assets is really what you need. And that would allow most people to retire. And in the case of an apartment building that's generating that 10 to 30% range of cash flow on average, and again, are you average, Dan? Am I average? Who's average?
No, I'm real.
We're real. We're normal. We're standard, right? And so, you know, we talk about averages because we got to have something to talk about, but averages are for marketing. And yet, have I watched and Dan's watched clients for 20 plus years generate these types of returns using these types of assets? Absolutely. And I would suggest to you that if you can control, which we can, $3 to $4 million of real estate with maybe $500,000 worth of investable capital, you know, you're on a path, a trajectory to where the amount of the wealth becomes less important than the type of assets it's invested in. And when somebody says, well, you know, gee, I don't have $3 or $4 million. Well, you don't need $3 or $4 million if you leverage that investment into real estate. And right now may not be the best time to talk about leverage. What are we seeing on loan to value type percentages, Dan? LTVs, as we call it, when we go buy.
It's going down, you know, relatively, you know, in the last, what, year or so, maybe 6 months even, it's gone from as high as 70%. We're seeing stuff at 55, 65,
or below. So, you know, that stresses the returns, obviously. I mean, on the one hand, I guess you could argue, as I see some syndicators doing, about how such investments, such structures are less risky. Yeah, I'll say from the standpoint of the lender, I'm not sure it's less risky from the standpoint of the investor, right, Dan?
You know, the lenders are taking a very conservative stance because they really don't know where the interest rate's going either. You know, this week, the rate was down a little bit. The long-term rate, the 10-year plus rate, was down a little bit this week.
Yeah.
But who knows?
It's kind of interesting.
You know, we're seeing things that, you know, cap rates as high as 5%, though, too.
So, or higher. Yeah, it depends on whether you're talking with the syndicator that's being rational about what the next, 2 to 5 years might look like. And even on acquisition now, I'm seeing above 5%. Heck, I think we've seen 7% on some smaller transactions, if I remember. But again, what does that mean, though, Dan? That means that the emphasis needs to be on dealing with syndicators that have been to the finish line many times. It's like I say when I get on a big jet, as I'm getting ready to do tomorrow to head back overseas, I want somebody flying that aircraft that's been shot at before. And I don't necessarily mean in Vietnam, although that is the case with many of the, still the case with some of the commercial pilots. But I mean, they've had some hardship in life. And in that case, in that cockpit, I want to know that they know what to do or what to try or how to get, you know, that plane under control. And likewise, if you're investing your money with a stranger, as it were, you want to be able to confirm that, hey, these guys have endured some hardship. They were around in the mid-'80s or in 2008 to 10 time frame, and they were able to successfully steer the ship, you know, through the channels, right, or however you want to compare it. And so it puts an emphasis on quality. And I'm not – I don't want to knock the local type platforms that I refer to as the old school platforms. There are good reasons and there's bad reasons to join, those platforms. And, you know, unless you've been there, done that, as we have, you won't know, you won't understand where the sales pitch starts and ends versus the realities. And, you know, it's only when you look at actual transactions from our clients that we have an appreciation for the fact that, you know, there's some transactions that from the very beginning someone really shouldn't have invested in, or they should have invested and didn't because they didn't understand some of the metrics, the math metrics. As I've heard so often in the last couple years, it's all about the math. Well, it's always been about the math. It's just in the days of Giddy, that's G-I-D-D-Y, Giddy investing, where everything went up, everybody was an expert. Right, Dan? A lot of investment experts out there that couldn't help but make money. But now you've got to pick your spots a little bit more scientifically and understand some. You know, one of the things we were just talking about, Dan, was the cap rate, which is an integral part of what you pay to buy a property or what you sell a property for when you exit or what you refinance at. The lender is almost like a buyer in that sense. They're going to dictate the cap rate. You really won't be able to dictate the cap rate. You might be able, well, you will be able to impact net operating income, but you know that little thing called a cap rate is ultimately at the end of the day what's going to determine value and then in turn loan to value. And unfortunately, the lender controls two out of the three effectively. I'm not going to say they overtly do, but effectively. The market actually is who's dictating those variables. Would you add anything to that, Dan?
You know, the lender is, of course, the leverage, and they've got the big stroke when it comes to the overall property. There's no doubt. As they should, I think, Nathan. They're putting the biggest chunk of the money in the deal. So,
well, it's remarkable when you think about it. And you know, you said earlier that in the last 6 months to a year, we've seen 70% LTVs and actually higher. But let's just think about that. Even at 70, isn't it remarkable, Dan, that a lender will put up 70% of the capital for us to go buy an apartment building or a single family rental, et cetera? And then how much do they want? What's their share of that, Dan? What if they went and bought it? What would their share be? It'd be 70%, right, of the profits. Of course, they'd get 70% of the losses too. But how much do they take in exchange for that 70%?
What, 4 or 5%?
Right, and maybe 6 months or a year ago, well, not maybe, there were situations. In fact, there's situations today where maybe somebody's assuming a 3.5% loan. That's unbelievable that a lender, any lender, would say, hey, we'll give you 70 to 80% of the capital, and all we want out of that is for you to run the property and make money and give us 3.5% or 4%. That's insane if you think about it, right? And who gets the other, 60 to 65% of the cream or the profit attributable to their 70% interest, Dan? Who's getting that?
The limited partners and the sponsor.
And that just blows my mind. And I'm thinking many times, you know, we just assume people understand that, and we're wrong, because I know from lunches like I had this week with a prospect, they really do not understand where the cash flow comes from. And I'm here again. I just want to remind folks that may be tuning in. I'm here with Dan Dubose, CPA, and we're talking about our favorite topic, which is real estate syndications and the math associated with that. And I guess to tie a nice, neat little bow around this so we can spend just a few minutes talking about the industrial project, I just want to encourage you, start where you're at today. There's no reason that you've got to be an expert. If you work with experts, that can help you understand the math for what you're signing up for. Start where you're at today. You don't need a college education. We talked about a college degree. A college degree, college education will not teach you how to make money. I've yet to see that program. You don't need a real estate license. You especially don't need a real estate license to invest in these transactions. And you don't need prior experience. That's amazing that we can join in these professionally run transactions and we're just normal folks. And, you know, you don't have to, there's no event that you could possibly be waiting for, unless maybe you're getting ready to be an heir to, you know, multiple millions of dollars, or you're going to win the mega million lottery. What is it up to now, Dan? I think it's almost $1 billion, if I remember right.
Yeah,
for Tuesday. Not that I'm watching, but anyway, in any event. Okay, so if you're interested, you want someone to help you understand what you're signing up for so you can get active, change the trajectory of your retirement wealth, again, beaplanner.com. That's BEAPLANNER. Click the forms link, submit those forms, and then click the call link right next to it. Schedule a call with Dan and I, and we'll be happy to review your specific facts and circumstances. Dan, let's talk about the industrial transaction just briefly. We've got about 7 minutes left here. That's in Virginia, I believe, if I remember correctly. And what caught our eye on this? I mean, as you might suggest, it had something to do with the return, right? But
it has a 30% IRR, internal rate of return, but more significantly, I think, is a 2.2 that you get on your money. It does have a 3-year hold. It doesn't pay out anything for 3 years.
Yeah,
in Massachusetts.
Yeah, When you say you get a return on your money, you're specifically referring to the equity multiple that's provided or pro-formed.
Did
you say the IRR was, Dan? It was an astronomical number.
30.4% is what they're publishing.
Yeah, that's at the investor level. The project level is actually just over 40. That's pretty amazing. In today's times. Now, the sponsor's putting quite a bit of capital up, about 5%, which we like to see. And this is, more of a, I said industrial, it's really more mixed use is what it is. There's a multifamily component. What were the other, I think some retail, Dan?
Right, some big box stores.
Yeah. What was the cap rate, since that's been a big focus of ours, what was the cap rate going in? Do you recall?
I recall because I just read it, and they have it called N/A, not applicable or not available. I'm not sure what they mean by
well,
that.
Well, I think it's
found that kind of amazing.
Well, I think it's because they are acquiring pre-development stage acreage, right? And who's the big tenant? Home Depot, a relocated Home Depot.
Yeah.
And then 829,000 square feet of retail and residential. I forget how big. 656 units on the multifamily. And, you know, in terms of, I think there's a life science building that's presumably a medical piece. So you've kind of got a mix here, which, you know, is not, you know, this group isn't in for the long haul. They're basically here to do, you know, things like site design and entitlement for folks that, you know, are wanting new facilities, right? So they're in and out. The acquisition and entitlement of the project will take approximately 24 to 36 months. So here at the height of recessionary headwinds, here's a project that's been able to get financing and pro forma, you know, some returns that are way above normal. I mean, we didn't see this type of transaction very often 3 years ago, right, Dan? I mean, I don't recall seeing too many like this. I mean, this is a Class A, top shelf opportunity. This is something that you'll have to be
minimum investment of $25,000.
Well, that's right. So it's not like you've got to bet the farm, so to speak, to participate. And that's what's good about, you know, some of these top shelf type platforms. Now, you do have to be accredited, which if you've listened to the show, we've explained that under the SEC rules, accredited investors are those that have $1 million or more in net worth, not counting your residence, personal residence. And accredited essentially means that the SEC thinks and believes that, you know, someone that's accredited doesn't need all the protections and disclosures, et cetera, that the non-accredited investor might, which isn't necessarily true. In fact, most 506C offerings, which is the type of offering for an accredited investor group, that's the SEC code section or crowdfunding statute section that applies. And for those that are non-accredited, you can still invest in quality projects. It's just you're going to have to show or demonstrate that you're sophisticated enough. And how do you do that? Well, you take training. You might join some of the real estate, what I call old school platforms. You might work with a CPA like moi. We qualify to where if you know, you're working with a CPA that works in this arena of understanding real estate, private partnership syndications, tax rules, real estate rules that pertain, then you are de facto deemed to be sophisticated. Now, you wouldn't be able necessarily to participate in a transaction like this, but there's many other transactions out there that the non-accredited investor can avail themselves of, and we'll show you some sources where you can participate. But Dan, anything, since we're coming up here, I think we've just got a couple minutes left. Can you think of anything else on a transaction like this that stands out, either good, bad, or indifferent?
You know, I think the good is that you can get in at that low amount. It's a good place to put money that you can park for 3 years and get a 2.5% or 2.2% return on it. At 25 and 3 years, it gets you back $55,000 projected.
Right, pro forma. And how about the location here? Does that stand out to you?
Yes, it's in a high rent district. Maybe I should say, or East Coast area, Boston, Massachusetts. It's in a very well situated financial area. I believe
the
close to Harvard, MIT.
Yeah, you're right there. Close to the subway system, major interstate.
Yeah, it's got all kinds of nice avenues of getting in and out of it.
That's exactly right. It, you know, again, as things tighten up, location, 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 and I don't care whether it's a multifamily project or an office building, a life science building, retail, whatever, hedge your bet by being in the right locations. And that is kind of a safety net. And then also scale. You know, this particular project will have 4 apartment complexes in the area that are 1,000-plus units total, I guess. Okay, well, we hear the music, Dan. We're at the end of the show once again. Always enjoy having you on the line. And we'll look forward to next week with the next segment of the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks for listening to Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Be sure to tune in next Saturday at 5 for another edition of Be a Planner Show here on AM 700 KSEV.